it's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome, welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I'm Gene Bolduc, your host. And joining me today, thank goodness, is Katie Coles, who is a public communications specialist with UNC Family Medicine. Katie, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy to have you here. You know, thanks to the miracle of Zoom, as I record my program, you could be vacationing in Europe and you would sound just the same in everybody's dashboard in Chapel Hill. Isn't that great? You can tell us, how's the Eiffel Tower? It's probably the same, right? Probably the same, yeah.
We'd all rather be in Europe right now.
Right. So, you know, we've been working together a little bit since I joined the Patient Advisory Council at UNC Family Medicine, which is my privilege to do. And one of the things that's taken us, I don't want to say off the tracks, but it certainly has been driving the train lately, is COVID response. And family medicine, of course, has been very, very involved as part of the entire university system. And I did want to talk to you a little bit about how UNC Family is handling its response. And tell me if you would, if you can remember this far back, it probably feels like 5 years ago right now, but when this first hit your desk, can you tell me about what that was like? And did your eyes grow wide and say, this is my life for the next 2 years, or how did it first come to you?
Yeah, you know, I almost wish that had been my response, but like many people, I'm sure, it was kind of, I didn't realize that this would be my life for the next several months to,
right,
you know, who knows how long it's going to continue going at this point. But I right. remember back in March, it wasn't until, you know, we got sent home to start working remotely that
right.
it really took effect. You know, this is serious. This is going to be serious for quite some time. You know, we have a real issue on our hands and it's so unknown and uncertain and everyone's
right.
kind of going day by day with the information they get. And that's very much what my role was just kind of, you know, waiting for others to communicate to me, you know,
right.
from UNC Health, from the university, you know, what's going on, what's our plan, and all of that's changing every day, right?
Yeah.
So it was a very by the seat of your pants type of thing. But then again, I felt comforted, you know, being at UNC and knowing that we were at least handling it and taking the precautions we needed to take. And in terms of family medicine, I think we jumped right in very quickly and addressed as a department, you know, what was going to be safe for not only the employees, but our patients too. So
right.
that was very comforting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, for me, that very segment that you're talking about, that was the most stressful thing, was how shut down everything was so quickly. I mean, on one hand, I was gratified to see how everyone cooperated with that, because I think we know now that Americans are not, it's herding cats trying to get all of America to behave
yeah.
in one way. And I was really surprised. Like through April, man, it was eerie being, it was like being outside right after a big snow and mm-hmm. how nobody's out there. Nobody's in the store. Nobody's on the streets
yeah.
Driving around doing ordinary things. And that was pretty spooky at first, but at the same time, kind of, I felt grateful about it that people were taking it seriously and cooperating with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, as we, and it turns out Dr. Fauci said, gosh, just a week or two ago, I think that in fact, at the peak of all of that shutdown, that the economy and sort of America at large was only about 50% shut down. And I thought, well, I'm not driving around on the right streets, because to me, it looked higher than,
I mean,
it maybe was as an average. I have to tell you, Chapel Hill in the spring, and there's really nobody outside doing much of anything that's work stuff, and so there's less traffic and all that. Mm-hmm. In some ways, I didn't mind that too much because it was, you know, it was kind of nice and all that. But I have to say, if I was in New York City at that time, than the scary and frightening nature of it, I can't imagine. You're in your apartment and you're staying there.
Those photos of the empty streets in Times Square, I never thought we'd see anything like that.
Oh, just amazing. And if you had young kids during that time and you're in your apartment and you're going to stay there until May, wow. That's really, I have a 3-year-old grandson, I'm telling you. He has the run of this house. And when he leaves here, he's here 2 days a week. When he leaves here, I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
But he's leaving though.
Mm-hmm. Not 24/7.
Yeah.
An indefinite amount of time.
Exactly. Just no outside time.
Yeah.
Because in a big city, you really can't permit that. Mm-hmm. And that's something really wonderful and lovely about Chapel Hill is there's a lot of green space right in the heart of the town. Mm-hmm. You can walk through the campus during that time and not run into any students.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the university handled that by, I think, first extending the spring break and then just saying, that's it, we're virtual, don't come back.
Mm-hmm.
And then the students weren't back until just recently. But so that, you know, how they handled that was a very different thing in some ways from how the schools did. Mm-hmm. And everybody's been, I think, struggling, but eventually has kind of found their balance about managing all of this. In your role, you handle newsletters, for example, for family medicine. How often did you send out a newsletter last fall?
Last fall, we were on a once a month schedule.
Right.
Very regular, very consistent. It was easy to plan for. And then March hit, and it was kind of, whoa, you know, we need a lot more touch points here. Yeah. And it became a bi-weekly effort with even some extra emails sprinkled in between when
the
information was coming through and we needed to get that out to our patients. You know, we were hitting them as often as we needed to.
The information's changing so much.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Has family medicine has been doing clinics, I think, for testing, fairly substantial effort there. This is, we should be clear, this is for UNC patients.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think testing is for UNC patients and their families. Is that right? It's anyone who's in your household?
Sorry, you might be referring to what we were talking about with the flu shot.
I'm sorry. You're right. I'm talking about the flu shot. I've gotten ahead of myself. My bad.
Yeah.
With COVID testing, thank you for that correction. With COVID testing, you were doing kind of a drive-through clinic for COVID testing at the ambulatory care center. Is that still happening or is that done now?
Yes. Yeah, so UNC set up, at first, I believe 10 to 11 respiratory diagnostic centers.
Right.
I apologize. I don't know if that number grew or I don't know what it is now.
It's been 5 minutes. It's probably changed.
it's hard to keep up with. But we are still running several, at least, respiratory diagnostic centers. And our medical director at the Family Medicine Center, Dr. Amir Barzan, played a very big role in that response and helping.
Right.
Run those. So anytime a patient exhibited COVID symptoms or had a potential exposure, they were immediately directed to the respiratory diagnostic center, which is where we conducted all of our testing. So rather than having patients come into places like the Family Medicine Center or clinics and offices, you know, we're limiting that risk by directing everyone to one place that's designated as COVID testing.
Right. And that is a drive-through situation, right? They come up to your car, you never get out of the car.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. Are they going to do, they're just going to continue doing that until the idea of needing testing is exhausted for whatever reason, or?
Yeah, to my knowledge, yes. And I believe they're, you know, working on implementing other testing plans. For example, Dr. Barzan's now involved with campus health and determining, you know, a testing protocol for students remaining on campus, that kind of right. thing. So I'm sure we'll see, you know, even more changes there. Again, that day-to-day, week-to-week
right.
mentality.
yeah.
But thankfully, UNC does have excellent capacity for testing, which we've seen
right.
throughout this crisis. So that's been comforting to know that, you know,
that's great.
If you're a patient and, you know, you need a test,
just go get one.
Yeah.
Right. Just go get one.
Talk to your provider and
yeah.
they'll be able to refer you to one of those centers.
Fantastic. And now if we're going to take a break in just a moment, if folks want to follow details about this more accurately, if they want to just kind of follow mm-hmm. what's going on, what's the best website location to check in with and bookmark?
Yeah, there is a website, coronavirus.unc, you know, I don't want to butcher the exact website, but if you search, you know, UNC Health Coronavirus, there
right.
is a dedicated page on the UNC Health website.
Right.
You can find all of the most recent up-to-date information.
Right.
There's even, you know, an online checker there, you know, like, do I need a test? And you fill out a short little questionnaire that
right.
might guide your thoughts there. So yeah, that's a very right. helpful tool for folks.
Yes. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. All right. Great. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking with Katie Coles, who is a public communication specialist with UNC Family Medicine. She is our guest for the full hour, and we're going to be right back. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we're back talking with Katie Coles from UNC Family Medicine. And Katie, I know that you just had an epiphany about what that actual website is. Want to spit that out for us?
I did, yes. It is unchealthcare.org/coronavirus. That's where
okay.
you can find all the latest information from UNC related to COVID.
A wonderful, it's kind of a dashboard, right? And you can just, you can evaluate whether or not you should get a test yourself. You can see what
yeah.
the latest news is from
exactly.
the university and on the virus overall. It's a great resource.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for miraculously remembering that by looking it up during the break.
Correct myself.
this happens so much on this program. You probably don't want to know. So my next easy softball question for you is: since everything's cruising along so easily, with every day being boring at work for you,
okay.
trying to be as sarcastic as possible. Flu season will be here in about a minute. And by the way, congratulate me because I'm not even mentioning the hurricane that is barreling toward Texas and Louisiana at this moment. You know, and it'll be here. By the way, it's going to come to North Carolina. It's going to find its way. We hope it's going to pass over north, but
that's what
we'll
need.
See.
More rain.
Hurricanes are bad at directions, you know. Before we get out of hurricane season, we're going to get one, I assure you. But the thing that's a lock is flu season, and you know, flu season combined with the coronavirus presents a very particular kind of problem because we're trying to encourage people to do what you and I are doing right now, which is work from home if you can. And minimize the amount of time that you spend out in public.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely eliminate the amount of time that you spend out in public without a mask.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone wears a mask, we will get the virus under control. But of course, there are sometimes circumstances out of your control. So one of those factors is flu season. And we know that flu season comes and goes. We know that it has varying degrees of severity, but we know it's coming. So everybody who should get a flu shot should get a flu shot.
Which is everybody.
Which is everybody. People like me, I'll just put myself as the example. I'm a wonderful example in medical situations. I have underlying conditions. I'm very, very old, as you know. And I'm diabetic. And so I have to be, I'm in that next layer of risk when it comes to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the flu, I similarly have to be a little extra careful. I have a grandchild, you know, I don't want him to get the flu. I don't want to get it from him. We all need to get our shots. Now, getting a flu shot means going to your doctor, or going to, or going to your pharmacy, right? Pharmacies.
Right.
Yeah, give out flu shots and
several locations. I mean, the Harris Teeter down the road from me is advertising flu.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And maybe you can get, you know, a head of lettuce and a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk at the same time as your flu shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, I think, have in mind that they don't want to take the added risk of seeing the doctor because of their concerns about COVID, which are valid.
Sure.
So tell me what you guys are doing. I think you're taking some extra measures about managing patient flow, mm-hmm. when it comes to flu season and flu shots. And mm-hmm. tell us what you're doing that folks need to know about when it comes to an office visit to get their flu shot.
Of course, yeah. So first of all, if you are a family medicine patient and you're coming in for just a regular appointment, you can get your flu shot right then and there. So that's super easy. You know, you're already there. Go ahead and knock it out. Get it done. And the other thing we're doing is throughout the fall, we'll be offering walk-in flu shot clinics where if a patient comes, then and they're accompanied by family members or guests, you know, we'll go ahead and take care of those other household members as well, as long as they are accompanying a family medicine patient.
Right.
Go ahead and take care of the whole family, you know, get it done. Again, nice and easy walk-in clinic hours. So we're really trying to make sure we're making this as convenient and safe as possible for people coming in to get their shots. But we're also encouraging, you know, whether you get it from us or not, please just get one. If it's easier right. for you to go to the CVS, to go to a grocery store, wherever they may be offering them, just get your flu shot and then, you know, shoot us a message in MyChart to let us know you got it and we'll mark you off. And that's just another layer of security, knowing that, okay, people are doing what they need to do and
right.
getting vaccinated.
Yeah, so that coverage is the important thing. And in years past, I know that it's kind of a thing like this, you know, I'm making a gesture of waves, that there are varying degrees of effectiveness about flu shots.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that I heard that last year's was very, very effective. Mm-hmm. I think this year it's the same vaccination.
It is, yeah,
they same expect
vaccine.
It to be, yeah, mm-hmm. they expect it to be similarly effective.
Yeah. Yeah, and so what people may not always realize about the shot, because, you know, you hear the argument, well, you can get the shot and still get the flu.
Right.
It's true, but, you know, another part of that is if you do contract the flu after getting the vaccine,
right.
your odds of becoming seriously ill from the flu are lower. So, you know,
right.
we might be seeing lower instances of serious illness or hospitalizations from the flu if people do get the vaccine.
Right.
So very helpful for that. And, of course, The other thing is just herd immunity. You know, we don't have a vaccine for COVID, and that's something we can't control, but we have one for the flu. And that's
right.
something that we all need to be very cognizant of. And, you know,
right.
like you say with COVID and wearing your mask, it's not just to protect you, it's to protect others. The same thing goes for the flu shot. And I think another concern, you know, is I've already heard the argument, oh, well, if I'm walking around wearing a mask everywhere, how am I going to get the flu anyway? But that's, you know, nothing is 100% certain. And yes, hopefully the mask and, you know, hygiene procedures that we're all following
right.
do prevent you from
right.
getting the flu, but you just don't know. So why not
yeah.
get the shot and add that extra layer of security and, you know, protect the community the way we should every flu season.
Exactly right. And I'm really glad you made that point. I want to come back and talk about that, expand on that just a little more.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Katie Coles, Public Communications Specialist for UNC Family Medicine. She's our guest for the full hour. And you're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, I'm back talking to Katie Coles, Elon graduate. She is the public communications specialist for UNC family medicine, and we were just, you know, we're just talking about the elephant in the room, I guess, when you're talking about COVID and all of the situation and how the it's, you know, we've even had an earthquake this year, how the ground is shifting, it seems, almost constantly on this and making decisions, and that we both agree that if anybody invites us to become a school board member or a university administrator, we're going to turn down the job because no, thank you. Too much stress already in life. The universities, and I mean all of them in the area, who have various kinds of status. Duke, of course, is a private school. There are the multiple constituent UNC institutions that are right in the Triangle area. And they've made various decisions about bringing students back, hoping to kind of lock down COVID and keep it under tight control. Mm-hmm. But I think unless you can manage the, you know, activities of students that are separate from the classes they're going to, as a practical matter, this was probably never going to really work. And I think it probably was the right thing for them to try, because it's so valuable to have in-person education and have that as part of the college experience. When all of this broke in the spring, Carolina and most of the universities around the country were either at or about to be at spring break. Mm-hmm. So effectively what they did is say, don't come back after spring break. And so I don't think that they really had the full immersion kind of situation to see how it would behave with student populations, except mm-hmm. that there were outbreaks related to spring break and all of that, which was related to what people do separate from school. They gather, they go to parties and whatnot. And, mm-hmm. and apparently, you know, pretty much the same thing has occurred here this year. A lot of the students for Carolina, for example, will remain in Chapel Hill. They live off campus, mm-hmm. which some have argued is part of the problem. not only because it puts pressure on the housing market, but because it means that the university can't say, okay, all right, kids, it's 10 o'clock, lights out. you know, they're not children. And they're going to stay in the area. They might just be doing school from home, just like you're working from home and I am.
Right.
And I, you know, do you have a lot of patients that are UNC students? Do you have seasonal patients?
I know we do serve some of the student population. I'm not sure what that number might be, honestly. But I do know that, yes, we see patients, our students as patients.
So,
you know, you hit the nail on the head. It's hard to, you know, really say for sure what things are going to look like with the university going virtual and, you know, who's actually going home and who might stay, you know, as someone pointed out the other day, they could just, you know, rent houses off campus and still be living together there. And that might cause a problem. Or then you might have students who don't want to go home because they've got high risk family members that they don't want to go home to. So it's a double-edged sword and very complicated to figure out. And I don't envy those tasked with doing so.
And you know, if you rented a house for the school year, then you've got a lease. You can't just walk out on the lease. And so I know that there are some who are trying to, you know, work things out with landlords and help them to try to, it's not the landlord's fault. I mean, the landlord mm-hmm. shouldn't be penalized by losing a tenant and losing that revenue. So it's difficult. As we agreed, Katie does not want that administrator's job. I don't want that administrator's job. There's not enough cash in the world to get me to walk into that. And it is very similar with K-12. So are you guys, we talked a couple of months ago about working on doing some outreach with School of Public Health, I think. Is there anything going on in that arena between family health, family medicine and the School of Public Health?
Not currently, or not yet, I should say. But you know, that is something that we have talked about and I think would be of interest. And that's just a matter of, you know, connecting with the right folks and seeing if there's some opportunities for us to collaborate there. We've talked about,
right,
you know, doing the same thing with other departments. And thankfully the communicators, within the School of Medicine have talked about, you know, getting together virtually, of course, to talk about just swapping right. ideas, you know, what's everyone been working on. So thankfully there is a lot of collaboration, and room for collaboration at UNC, which is really nice.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot we can do just for the community at large if we put our heads together and work on some messaging efforts like that. Like our patient advisory council is full of so many great ideas for ways we can do that. So we're gonna keep utilizing them and see where we can be most effective and helpful in spreading information.
That would be a fun Zoom call. That'd be a fun brainstorming session, I think, to talk about doing. We were talked a little bit about doing some things with having the athletic coaches, which they've done. They've done mm-hmm. some of this. It's mm-hmm. fantastic about just trying to, you know, encourage students to wear masks and these various situations, and you know that if it were achievable that the university, that the region, I should say, that we can get the infection rate down really low, that it might mm-hmm. be possible to get some athletics activities going and have games played, and you know the athletic department really wants this and the fans really want it, and you know, at this point, I think I'd watch an online chess match if it was live. I know my son would. He loves chess that much, but it's, you know, it's a big challenge. I think that would be a lot of fun to brainstorm about, you know, how we can keep people engaged and trying to find new ways to do the normal things mm-hmm. more safely. And that's the trick of it, Katie, is that it needs to be a focus on doing something more safely. You know, we, years ago in the AIDS crisis, at first there was discussion about having safe sex. And that was rather quickly changed to a term, safer sex, because mm-hmm. you know, condoms break, you know, things, chaos finds a way sometimes. And like you were saying about, you know, why, you know, people asking, why should I wear a mask if, you know, why do I have to worry about the flu if I'm wearing a mask all the time and whatever? And it's because you want to do these things to make your world safer, to make yourself a more difficult target. And that means, you know, eating a good diet, getting enough rest, getting some exercise, talking to your family members and staying socially connected so that you don't feel isolated and you don't succumb to the kind of sense of hopelessness that you can feel if you're mm-hmm. too much cut off from what's yeah. going on in the world.
Yeah.
All of these things are mitigating things that you do, but nothing is going to create a bubble in which you are impenetrably safe. That doesn't exist in the world. It's all about relative risk and managing that and hardening the target and keeping yourself, you know, it's like looking both ways before you cross the street. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that nothing will fall out, that the asteroid won't find its way. There's an asteroid coming too, you know.
I saw that.
Did you see that? I'm like, okay, so we had an asteroid, we got an earthquake, we have two hurricanes converging at the same time, which I'm sure I've never seen. And you know, the graphic of that, of the two hurricanes merging, mm-hmm. they come together like this and they produce this overlap like a Venn diagram. So mm-hmm. somebody coined the term a Vennicane, which I think is clever. Uh-huh. That's like snowpocalypse. It makes me wonder what's coming for us in the winter months. We could end up getting 2 feet of snow every 2 weeks or something. Wouldn't that be awesome?
You might stay home.
Then you'd have to, you know, stay home. If it's a snow day, that's a whole different thing. So, you know, it's all of these things to keep things, you know, within the margins, I guess, and try to get things as close to our normal life as we can. Mm-hmm. And we want to encourage people in the strongest possible way to get a flu shot. Flu vaccines will be available September 1st. Mm-hmm. And we want folks to go out and locate a place, look it up. And
yeah, it's not the year to wait on a flu shot. You know, flu season really starts in September and goes through the spring. But, you know, don't put off getting that vaccine.
Right.
Get ahead of it. And yeah, just don't put yourself at that risk, especially this fall with coronavirus going on. You know,
And whatever else is coming, right? Because we're open to all options. We know it's out there. Mm-hmm. It's like the X-Files out here. Okay, so we're going to continue on with Katie Coles from UNC Family Medicine. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And we're back with Katie Coles, who is a communications expert at UNC Family Medicine. I wanted to talk for a minute, Katie, about what I imagine is kind of a second layer, a below the surface kind of problem. And I'll give you this example. A couple of years ago, you know what? It was 2016, now that I think about it, on Memorial Day, I ended up in your beloved UNC hospital. Mm-hmm. Because I had appendicitis. Oh. And I had early appendicitis, and so they did not take out my appendix. Mm-hmm. So I was in the hospital over Memorial weekend, which is a whole experience unto itself. And I was discharged on some very exciting IV antibiotics to which I was allergic.
Oh no.
And so it was quite a ride. It was quite a ride, but I still have my appendix. And anyway, while I was in the hospital, a thing happened apparently that can happen to people in the hospital, which is I got a little cough thing. Mm-hmm. And this developed into quite a kennel cough. It was like a month later and I still had it. Mm-hmm. And it kind of blossomed into a upper respiratory thing. And it was so much fun that my husband got it too. But then his cleared up and mine didn't. And mm-hmm. it kept going. And it was like the end of July. And I still had this cough. And I'm coughing and coughing. And it's still going. Well, so I started to have pain in my chest. And it was hard for me to get a deep breath. Mm-hmm. And so I start texting with a friend of mine who was a medical doctor. She's unfortunately since passed away, but she is saying to me, you have pain where? And I said, oh, it's in, you know, it's kind of in my chest and it's here and it's hard to get a deep breath. And she said, go to the emergency room.
Yeah.
Go now. Yeah. Put down the phone, go get Rick, go to the emergency room. And I said, well, you know, and I had this whole thing about, listen, I was just in the hospital. I don't want to be in the hospital. And all of this stuff. Well, we went back and forth about this for a couple of hours on the phone. She made me promise to text her the following morning and let her know how I was. And I did all that. I also went and saw my doctor the next day. I just didn't want to go to the ER at 9 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. Now it turns out that what I had was pleurisy. And this is an inflammation of the tissue around the lungs. And this can kind of, I did not have pneumonia, which is what we suspected. But once she knew I wasn't like in really, you know, five alarm fire trouble, then she really let me have it and said, listen, you know, I love you, Jean, and you're a smart person, but I'm a doctor. You know? And when I tell you to go to the hospital, you know, don't make me call Rick mm-hmm. and come over there. She lived in Vermont. So don't make me come over there. And and this is my cautionary tale for our listeners, is that that turned out okay for me. I did still have pleurisy, and it was kind of a miserable couple of weeks before I finally shook that off. But I came through that okay because I was lucky, not because I was smart.
Right.
And the thing you can do in this situation is that you think you're avoiding risk by saying, oh, I don't want to be in the hospital. I don't want to go to the hospital when there's this scary virus going on. And I think that the lesson is the people at the hospital know how to keep you away from that virus.
Right.
And they can manage the flow of patients to say ordinary conditions that have been here for 50 years, like diabetes and heart disease and high blood pressure related conditions, they go this way and mm-hmm. COVID patients go that way.
Right.
And they handle that, I think, once you walk in the door. And this is true in your clinic as well, right?
Yeah. Oh, before you walk in the door.
Right.
We do screen our patients prior to walking in the building for any potential COVID symptoms or exposure. And if they're, you know, marked off as a yes there, then they get redirected to that respiratory right. diagnostic center I mentioned earlier. So we are taking every right. precaution to ensure our patient's safety when they come to one of our clinics or our urgent care so that they're not feeling that weight of concern over possible exposure.
So let me ask you about, is it, and I'm asking for your impression, and I'm not, I don't guess that you have data about this, but mm-hmm. do you have the impression that the people who are hospitalized with some of these conditions, diabetes complications, heart disease mm-hmm. related issues, are they coming in with illness that's more severe than they might have? In other words, are they coming in later in the process, making it more complicated to treat?
Yeah, I mean, my best estimated guess would be yes, that's probably mm-hmm. happening across the country right now, is people are not seeking care regularly or consistently for conditions that can be managed by your doctor. And that's been one of our main message points from family medicine throughout all of this, is do not delay care. You know, it's, nothing is worth that. And we have plenty of safe options to provide that care to you, whether it is right. an in-person visit or virtual or telephone. You know, just contact your doctor. Make sure you are managing right. conditions and anything else that may come along you're concerned about, whether it be a physical condition or your mental health. You know,
right.
contact your primary care provider can help you with those things. So that's our main message right. right now, is please do not delay that care and wind up having a more serious problem that we could have helped with sooner.
Yeah, you don't want to end up having to spend a dollar for a nickel problem if you caught it when it was still
right.
a nickel, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny how it's like money that way, but it's like that old commercial for the Fram oil filter, you can pay me now or you can pay me later. And if it's a matter of changing your oil and changing the oil filter, that can help your engine last a long time. Mm-hmm. If you think of your body that way, it seems kind of obvious, but I know that sometimes people are avoiding these kinds of engagements because they're trying to manage their risk and they're trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think there's almost nothing that you're considering and this is anybody that isn't at least worth a phone call. And mm-hmm. and that's where that relationship is so vital.
Yeah, and
because your doctor knows you.
Yeah, and we've really adapted to that situation. You know, we are doing plentiful telephone and virtual visits to accommodate those patients who may not feel comfortable coming in despite
right.
safety precautions. You know, we're trying to make sure there is an option for everyone where you feel safe and comfortable and you get the treatment that you need.
Right. Yeah. Right. And, you know, maybe you do need a visit and, mm-hmm. and maybe you can delay it by a month because your doctor thinks that that's an okay step to mm-hmm. take, but
right.
it's better to do that with your team.
Yeah. As long as you are following your doctor's guidance, on your
right.
health, is the most important thing.
Right. Well, Katie, it's great talking with you. I hope you come back. You know, just in case anything else comes up in your working life, I know it's very dull where you are. nothing to do. You're probably off screen or knitting or something. I mean, I'm sure you, but I think you'll probably come up with something. And I hope that when you do, you'll come back and check in with us and tell us how we're doing and Chapel Hill and at large. And please come back and join us again. It's been great having you.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. Thanks a lot. We're talking again with Katie Coles with UNC Family Medicine. That's it for us. And we'll see you all next week on the radio. Stay safe out there.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.